Hi, Dave Emery here. This is For the Record program number 999. In politics, nothing happens by accident. Weaponized feminism and the hashtag MeToo movement, part two, subtitled The Crucible. This is being recorded on March 6th of the year 2018. This program obviously is a second installment slash follow-up to For the Record 998. In politics, nothing happens by accident. Weaponized feminism and the hashtag MeToo movement. I have a number of things to recap and to emphasize before we get into this. In dealing with the hashtag MeToo movement, which I suspect is to a large extent a psyop. This is not to say that sexual harassment, male chauvinism, patriarchy, etc., is not an altogether real phenomenon. But as Franklin Roosevelt is alleged to have said, the quote is generally attributed to him. In politics, nothing happens by accident. I am somewhat skeptical about the hashtag MeToo movement as women suddenly finding their voice. This is something that I don't think happened by accident as far as women finding their voice. In my opinion, that is something that ideally should have happened 3,000 or 4,000 years ago. In dealing with what is obviously a very touchy subject, no pun intended again, I am not talking, I emphasize very strongly, I am not talking about feminism or women's rights per se, but I am talking about weaponized feminism. Feminism enlisted as a vehicle for psychological warfare and for the de facto realization of one of the oldest gambits in psychological warfare, something called divide and conquer, first formally enunciated, to the best of my knowledge, by Julius Caesar. Before I get to part one, a summation, and again, let me emphasize most emphatically, I am not talking about feminism or women's rights. I am talking about weaponized feminism and how all of a sudden a number of things seem to have happened. The subtitle to this program, The Crucible, is a reference to a play that was authored by the late Arthur Miller called The Crucible. It is about the Salem witch trials. It is, however, an allegory and statement about and condemnation of McCarthyism in the early 50s. Much of the hashtag MeToo movement, and much of what, again, not feminism, but weaponized feminism reminds me of, is that play. If opportunity presents itself, I would recommend seeing a stage production of Arthur Miller's The Crucible. Failing that, get a hold of a copy of the book and read the play. It is a very good one, and I think at this point in time, a very relevant one indeed. Before recapping some key points of the first installment of this, For the Record 998, in politics, nothing happens by accident, weaponized feminism and the hashtag MeToo movement, and again, women finding their voice is something that should have happened 3,000 or 4,000 years ago. All of a sudden, when we get, the most overtly male chauvinistic, sexually predatory, and grotesque president of our time, but I can't think of one who is more so. The advent of weaponized feminism and a social media-driven political phenomenon that has claimed a lot of people, many of them from the more progressive side of the political spectrum, and in particular with the Republicans holding a narrow 2-seat margin in the Senate, and with an overt pedophile and sexual predator, Roy Moore, having gone to defeat in Alabama, the disgusting removal of Al Franken, a very successful U.S. senator from Minnesota, in what was frankly a grotesque and something that should have been seen as ludicrous psychological warfare movement, one that had momentum given to it by a bot network, is something that I think serves as a signpost to what can be done, not only with, again, not feminism, but weaponized feminism, and using the grotesquely superficial, unverifiable, and frankly adolescent phenomenon of social media and tweeting as, I'm getting old as I'm rounding the curve and getting closer to my 70th birthday than I might like. I am definitely seeing the difference in our political culture, and nothing has contributed more profoundly to the dumbing down of our political culture than not only the internet, which has led to the gutting of reporting staffs for major daily newspapers. There is very little real investigative reporting done, but now an awful lot of news consists of tweets, not just Trump. Trump is really following a trend. And, you know, when you have tweets being the substance of what passes for news, I think you're basically asking for something superficial and at a psychosocial level, fascistic. Again, as I said last week, 140 characters in search of an author. I don't think I will ever get used to tweets being the substance of journalism and political science. Sadly, that is what we have come to in our society. Let me pose this conundrum. Does someone who is someone who tweets a lot a twit? Think about that. Or is a tweeter a twit? That is something to think about. We're going to take a look at what I think were generally some intelligent observations on the Harvey Weinstein phenomenon by Oliver Stone later. No sooner did Oliver Stone weigh in, saying basically that people should be a little more perhaps circumspect about Harvey Weinstein, perhaps, or the general phenomenon in general, then Oliver Stone was ripped by the media, citing tweets from various people. And that is the bottom of the barrel. It reminds me again of Arthur Miller's allegory about the McCarthy period expressed through his play The Crucible about the Salem witch trials. We're going to be talking about Harvey Weinstein and that case here in a few minutes. I want to emphasize, too, that what is important about the Harvey Weinstein case is not what Weinstein, in my opinion, is not what Weinstein did, as far as I can tell. He may very well have been the sexual predator he is reported to have been. In Hollywood, what has been euphemized as the casting couch is something of an enshrined, well, not enshrined, but an established tradition, albeit an altogether dishonorable one. As I speak in the year 2018, Hollywood is roughly 100 years old, and the casting couch basically is something of an institution, albeit a dishonorable one. What is really important here, I think, is the timing of the Harvey Weinstein brouhaha, because apparently Harvey Weinstein has been doing what he is alleged to have done for a long time, and yet this only came to light not only shortly after Malia Obama, Barack Obama's daughter, had interned with Harvey Weinstein in the early part of 2017, but after Harvey Weinstein had become a major donor to Hillary Clinton's 2016 campaign. In general, not only Harvey Weinstein, but other people in Hollywood have been major contributors to the Democratic cause. Hollywood in general has waxed relatively liberal in recent decades, and that, I think, is something to be taken into account. But again, vis-a-vis the Harvey Weinstein case, the very fact that it appears that Harvey Weinstein had been engaging in the altogether inappropriate type of behavior that he has been alleged to have done for a long time, and yet this really only becomes a major news story when Donald Trump, who boasts of grabbing women by the P word, who basically felt up his adult daughter Ivanka on stage at the Republican convention after getting what was could only be described as an overtly sexual assessment of her considerable physical charms. The same Donald Trump who had Ivanka seated on his lap at the Beach Boys concert at the age of 15, and with Fox News having been the focal point, the main media, I would call it propaganda rather than journalistic outlet for the Republican right, that, of course, is redundant, with that institution having been the focal point of many allegations of sexual harassment, and with the Fox institution having settled, apparently, a number of claims by some of its female employees, all of a sudden we see the emphasis shifted to Harvey Weinstein. And again, this is not to say that Weinstein did not do what he did. It would not surprise me one bit if he did. As I mentioned in part one, I have a very low opinion of human nature. That is part of the price that I have paid for almost 40 years on the air, examining what I have been examining. Echoing Hamlet, I care not for man. And the people who have power and influence generally leverage that power and influence to gain, whether it is financial gain or political gain or sexual gain or something along those lines, a combination thereof, I should say. They generally do that. With regard to showbiz, I am at a little bit of a disadvantage. I would say an advantage. I don't watch television at all. I don't have one in the house. And I rarely go to the movies. If I want to watch, vis-a-vis television, if I want to watch a bunch of foolishness, all I have to do is look out the window. It doesn't use electricity, and there are no commercials. Some of the people who have been accused of sexual harassment, etc., I'd never heard of. There was a comedian named Louis C.K. I'd never heard of him before. And many of the shows that featured stars who have been attacked, I had never seen at all. So, again, some of this is a long way from home for me. By the way, I was mentioning something in part one. I noted that Martin Luther King said that we should judge someone not by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. By that same token, I think we can extend that in saying that someone should be evaluated or judged not by the configuration of their genitals, nor what they do with their genitals behind closed doors, but rather the content of their character. Just because someone is a woman doesn't necessarily mean we have to believe her any more than we have to disbelieve her because she is a woman. If Eva Braun had been the Führer of Nazi Germany, would that have made what she said? Would that have made the big lies upon which Third Reich policy was based true? Would we have to believe the woman, in this case, Chancellor Eva Braun? He also mentioned Adolf Hitler. I forgot to mention when I was talking about the many right-wingers and fascists who were actually gay and who many of whom persecuted gays, I forgot the most important, and that was Adolf Hitler himself. There's a book called The Hidden Hitler, maintains that Adolf Hitler was gay, perhaps bisexual. I don't view that as definitive. Someone asked me if I was going to do a show about that. The answer is no, because what he did with his genitals in private, it really has no bearing on anything. If Hitler was gay or bisexual, and I think there's a good case to be made for that, does that mean that he was, by that token, good? No, of course it doesn't. Defining someone simply, again, by the configuration of their genitals or by what they do with their genitals behind closed doors is in and of itself amoral. Not immoral, but amoral. And vis-a-vis Hollywood, and we're going to wade into this in a minute, I think Hollywood is an example of the tremendous conflicts that are inherent in talking about human sexuality in a political context. As I mentioned in part one of this series, there are only going to be two, I believe, there is arguably no arena of human behavior and psychological makeup that is more profound, more conflicted, largely unconscious than human sexuality. I would hazard the guess that most people, the vast majority of people's experiences in the sexual realm, have quite a bit of pain, if not an overwhelming amount of pain and trauma associated with them. Many of those feelings are heavily conflicted. Many of them are unconscious or preconscious. And in examining human sexual behavior, there is nothing that perhaps is less cut and dried than human sexual behavior. And in Hollywood, I think some of the complexities of that are to be viewed in the context of what we are going to be talking about. Now, vis-a-vis weaponized feminism in part one of the series, I talked about a column from The Guardian, an op-ed column by Jens Stoltenberg, the Secretary General of NATO, and actress Angelina Jolie calling for NATO, again, a military alliance, to take the lead in enforcing women's rights. That is what I mean by weaponized feminism. I would note that Angelina Jolie was one of Harvey Weinstein's accusers in that regard.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. Long article-length descriptions of the For the Record programs are available at spitfirelist.com, also featuring information that wasn't in the original program due to the limitations of time.
With regard to Hollywood, and as I am recording this, we are a couple of days past the Academy Awards, the awarding of Oscars, and leaving aside the grotesquely institutionalized casting couch phenomenon, Hollywood itself markets sex in a more or less overt fashion. One of the aspects of the dumbing down of our culture is how much news is about nothing at all. For example, what commercials there were at the Super Bowl. Who bleeping cares, frankly? And now we have all of these internet stories about what gowns various movie starlets wear to awards ceremonies. And those are, I think, significant. We see stories about how so-and-so rocked an off-the-shoulder, daring off-the-shoulder gown by so-and-so, or thus-and-such rocked a daring slid-up-to-the-top-of-the-thigh gown by so-and-so. This is exemplary of the marketing of sexuality in Hollywood and our society in general. I do not, as I mentioned in part one, I don't fault Leanne Tweeden at all for posing for Playboy or Maxim or for marketing her considerable charms for professional gain. People have to eat, they have to keep a roof over their head, and that is one way to do it. I do think that is relevant in Leanne Tweeden's case because it is indicative of the fact that she will use her considerable charms for professional gain, and I think with her politics tracking to the right and to the aforementioned Fox News, and with the pictures that I would emphasize people look at, in For the Record 998 of the fateful USO tour, during which Al Franken allegedly sexually molested Leanne Tweeden, and they are frankly very indicative. Al Franken was obviously making fun when he pretended to grope an apparently sleeping Leanne Tweeden, who was wearing a flak jacket. It was for a photograph, and one could question certainly the taste of such an action, but it obviously was not a serious attempt at sexual harassment, any more than when Leanne Tweeden was goosing a male country and western performer on stage at the same or on the same USO tour. And there's a picture of her grabbing his butt. That was not a sexual harassment move at all, although again perhaps questionable under the circumstances. There's also a picture of a skit that Al Franken and Leanne Tweeden did at that same USO tour in which Al Franken is commenting on a skimpy undergarment, either a pair of panties or a brassiere, it is not clear. And Leanne Tweeden is mugging with a big smile on her face. The whole thing is tongue-in-cheek, again, no pun intended, indicating the bawdy slash libidinous aesthetic of that USO tour. The whole hashtag MeToo phenomenon entails the portrayal of sexuality as sort of a cut-and-dry affair, and it is nothing but that. The women who show up at awards ceremonies with striking, sexually suggestive outfits, whether they're slit up to the, you know, the top of the thigh or, you know, daring off, you know, bare back or off the shoulder or peekaboo bosom displays. Those women are doing what basically Hollywood is all about to a considerable extent. They're not stupid. They're certainly not blind. They are doing what a lot of people do. I don't condemn them for that at all. However, I think in this regard, the sort of overt, oversexed manifestation of Hollywood culture in general, and Hollywood is very sexed up, and in my opinion, perhaps overly sexed up, that high-octane sexuality, I think, might be portrayed or conceived of along the lines of alcohol. There are X number of people who can take one or two or three drinks and not go off the deep end, and then there are people who cannot touch alcohol because if they start, they go off the deep end with disastrous results for themselves and or very often other people as well. Harvey Weinstein appears to be one of those people who just cannot handle the over-the-top hypersexuality of Hollywood. This is not, again, this is not to excuse what he appears to have done, but rather I think the superficially cut and dry portrayal of Hollywood sexuality is inappropriate. I don't think the women who wear the daring outfits at the awards ceremonies are to be condemned at all. Harvey Weinstein obviously could not handle that, or appears to have not been able to handle that temptation. And being a man of power and influence, he has apparently done what many people who are people of power and influence do, which is to abuse that power and influence. Again, what I'm talking about here is not Harvey Weinstein, but what the timing with which something that appears to have been going on for a long, long time suddenly surfaced. And that was in the late 2017, with the focal point on Donald Trump, with Fox News, about which we will say more later, having been the focal point of a whole lot of apparently justified sexual harassment charges. All of a sudden, Harvey Weinstein has what Roger Stone called his time in the barrel. From Hollywood Life by Bonnie Ford, this is an example of what I don't like about this kind of, you know, ain't in the show biz, don't watch TV, rarely go to the movies. And, you know, an awful lot of the coverage of this comes from media sources I would consider to be the crawfish of the journalistic world, such as Hollywood Life by Bonnie Fuller of October 11th of 2017, an article by Aaron E-R-I-N Silva, S-I-L-V-A. Harvey Weinstein never did anything inappropriate with intern Malia Obama, say sources. Former first daughter Malia Obama, 19, completed an internship last summer at Harvey Weinstein's company when she was 18, but the film producer was on his best behavior around her, multiple sources told Page Six TV. Skipping down. Being a big-time producer in the spotlight has led Harvey to get close to many people throughout his career, and through his fortune, he's been able to donate large amounts of money to causes he believes in. For Barack's 2012 re-election campaign, he donated $680,000, and for Hillary Clinton's 2016 campaign, he helped raise up to $1.5 million. Again, with Harvey Weinstein, like many other powerful people in Hollywood, being very close to and involved with not only the Democratic Party, but with the two-term U.S. President Barack Obama, having not only contributed to his campaign, but having had his daughter intern at his company in the early part of last year, and with Weinstein having contributed $1.5 million to Hillary Clinton's campaign, I find the timing of this interesting, precisely since it appears to have been going on for a very long time. Of course, Hillary Clinton's husband, Bill Clinton, was engaging in some improper behavior. I think the circumstances of the Monica Lewinsky case bear a quick review. I've talked about this before, including in a lecture about the destabilization of the presidency of Bill Clinton. The story of Monica Lewinsky's dalliance with Bill Clinton, or the other way around, comes to us via a right-wing journalist named Julianne Goldberg, who in turn got the story from a White House aide named Linda Tripp, T-R-I-P-P, who was not only a George H.W. Bush holdover, George H.W. Bush, former CIA director, the man for whom CIA headquarters is named, and the man defeated by Bill Clinton, but Linda Tripp had a background in counterterrorism, and that is arguably the most national security, CIA, etc., linked aspect of the federal judicial establishment. She was the one who basically got the info about Monica Lewinsky to Julianne Goldberg, and then things were off to the races. She also was the last person to see White House counsel Vince Foster alive when she served him lunch, and a blonde female hair was found near his corpse. Of course, the media, all the right-wing media, were saying it must have been Hillary Clinton who killed Vince Foster. They never asked whether perhaps that blonde female hair belonged to the blonde and obviously female Linda Tripp, a counterterror specialist with the George H.W. Bush White House. Another thing I found interesting about the Harvey Weinstein case, in addition to the fact that it surfaced at a time when his improper behavior would be associated with the Democrats, is the fact of one of his major accusers and a person who was deeply involved with the creation of this story. That is an Italian woman named Ambra, A-M-B-R-A, Battaglia, B-A-T-T-I-L-A-N-A.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. You can subscribe to the comments posted on the SpitfireList.com website, most of them by a brilliant contributing editor who uses the moniker Terra Fractal, specializing, but by no means exclusively, in economic and financial matters.
The New York Times of October 16th of 2017 has a story by Megan Towhey, T-W-O-H-E-Y, James C. McKinley Jr., Al Baker, and William K. Rashbaum. For mogul, brush with police, then no charges. For decades, the film producer Harvey Weinstein succeeded in hiding from public view complaint after complaint of sexual misconduct against him. But on the evening of March 28, 2015, at a rendezvous at the Tribeca Grand, his longtime pattern of cover-ups was coming to an end. Meeting with him at the hotel was Ambra Battaglia, a 22-year-old model from Italy who had reported to the police the night before that Mr. Weinstein had groped her during a business meeting. She was wearing a wire. And it talks about what Weinstein apparently did. It sounds very much like a sting. Skipping down, they took a seat on the couch and Ms. Battaglia began showing Mr. Weinstein her modeling photos on a tablet computer as they discussed the possibility of her working as a lingerie model, according to the account she later gave police. When the topic turned to whether her breasts looked real, Mr. Weinstein lunged forward and grabbed them, etc. It sounds very much like a drug sting. If you know someone is apparently dealing drugs, you wire someone and then you get the topic around to, well, you want to buy some coke or whatever. Not to excuse what Weinstein did, but I find the fact that this signature event in the surfacing of Harvey Weinstein's apparently long-standing behavior is this woman, Ambra Battaglia. From BuzzFeed of April 8th of 2015 by Nicholas Medina Mora, Weinstein accuser helped bring down disgraced Italian premier's entourage. On August 22, 2010, in the Italian city of Milan, a famous television anchor invited two young models to a dinner party at Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi's country villa. The models, both of them barely 18 years old, were flattered by the invitation and enticed by the anchor's promises that he could help them get jobs in Berlusconi's media empire. Skipping down, the models reported that they were repeatedly groped by the prime minister and his associates, the records show. Skipping down, 4 years later, one of the models, Ambriana Battaglia Gutierrez, is involved in another high-profile sexual assault case. This time, the powerful mogul being accused is Harvey Weinstein. Now, Silvio Berlusconi was a member of the P2 Lodge of Italian fascist Lucio Gelli. And one of the characteristics about the P2 Lodge, which functioned as a closet fascist, a crypto-fascist government of Italy for decades, was that anyone who joined it, and there were powerful business people, powerful media people, powerful political figures, powerful military and intelligence figures, they had to submit something that could be used to blackmail slash leverage them. I would also note that at about this time, Silvio Berlusconi, who had formed coalition governments with the Alleanza Nazionale, the Italian party that was a successor to Mussolini's Fascisti, and by the way, he is now partnered with those same elements, Berlusconi had begun criticizing the austerity program of the German-dominated EU, and then, lo and behold, something that apparently he too had been doing for a long time, namely sexual improprieties with young women, comes to the surface. What Berlusconi's habits were called the bunja-bunja partying. And the fact that one of the people who surfaced his behavior, Ambra Battiana, also turned up on the other side of the Atlantic in another high-profile, politically connected sexual harassment case is something that I think we should take note of, as in that famous quote attributed to Franklin Delano Roosevelt, in politics, nothing happens by accident. And the second part of it is, if it happened, you can bet that it was planned that way. The Republican Party, by the way, part of the fascist Republican Ethnic Heritage Outreach Council, it incorporated a guy named Philip Guarino, who was an American, an Italian-American member of Licio Gelli's P2 Lodge. Guarino is now deceased. He was part of George Bush's, the elder George Bush's election campaign in 1988. The point being that Ambra Battiana, Ambra Battiana Guterres, as she called herself, or to which she changed her name after she disliked the publicity around this case, this gal gets around, and having helped to bring down the head of state of Italy, and then having been a key element in the media surfacing of the accusations against Harvey Weinstein, well, I question whether that is really a coincidence or whether this is part of a psyop. Something we should also quickly mention, and that is that in psychological warfare, one of the major gambits is to create a psychological association between two things that are not necessarily directly connected. If, for example, you can create a psychological association between Harvey Weinstein and his apparent sexual predatory behavior and Hillary Clinton, whose husband was engaged in some highly improper behavior, that doesn't mean that Hillary Clinton was involved in this at all. Or if you can create an association between Harvey Weinstein and his sexually predatory behavior and Barack Obama and his daughter Malia, even though Barack Obama did not engage in sexually predatory behavior and Weinstein did not engage in any such behavior with Malia Obama when she interned with his company in the early part of last year, that association is created, and that is a major element of psychological warfare. A very good point was made by Oliver Stone in his defense of Harvey Weinstein, again, indicating the not only the dumbing down of America, but the vulgarity of contemporary American journalism. The article I'm about to read is from the San Francisco Chronicle of October 12th of 2017, and yet it comes from a Hollywood blog called The Wrap, that's W-R-A-P. This is by a woman named Debbie Emery, E-M-E-R-Y, no relation, different spelling. Oliver Stone's defense of Harvey Weinstein sparks anger and accusations. Oliver Stone reads in part, Oliver Stone weighed in on the firestorm surrounding former mogul Harvey Weinstein that has spread across Hollywood, saying it is not right to condemn any man without a fair trial. Quote, I believe a man shouldn't be condemned by a vigilante system. It's not easy what he's going through. Either the platoon director, notice that they don't mention JFK, said Thursday at the Busan International Film Festival while addressing international media. He was a rival, and I never did business with him, Stone continued. I've heard horror stories on everyone in the business, so I'm not going to comment on that. I'll wait and see, which is the right thing to do. Well, that is basically the right thing to do. One of the reasons that I subtitled this program The Crucible, again, after Arthur Miller's play about, on a root level, about the Salem witch trials, but it was actually an allegory about McCarthyism, is that we are seeing people's careers destroyed by unvetted accusations. And again, this is not to say that Harvey Weinstein or a great many other people in Hollywood, where the casting couch is a long-standing institution. Although that's long-standing is the wrong metaphor. That's not to say that is that the accusations are untrue, but with women's use as espionage operatives being something that has happened for a long time, I think the use of weaponized feminism, again, not feminism, but weaponized feminism, is something that we need to pay attention to, because with our superficial culture, with hashtag this and hashtag that, it is very easy to create a firestorm of something that really is without substance, although it appears to have gained its major momentum after Al Franken already resigned. The momentum behind Al Franken's resignation, or for Al Franken's resignation, was generated in large measure by an apparently right-wing financed Japanese Twitter bot army. It wasn't even people doing that. Oliver Stone has been the focal point of CIA disinformation and media crucifixion for decades, ever since his work on what was frankly an excellent treatment of the JFK assassination, his movie JFK. Oliver Stone got the treatment in this San Francisco Chronicle article, again from The Wrap, a Hollywood blog. All sorts of people weighed in with vulgar tweets about Oliver Stone. A former Playmate of the Month alleged that Oliver Stone grabbed her, quote, boob, unquote, at a party, which he may have done, I don't know. And all sorts of other people then tweeted in with hashtag this and hashtag that. I would note, too, that this is, since last week's New York Times article on Weinstein, A-list actresses, including Miramax's brightest star, Gwyneth Paltrow, Angelina Jolie, Heather Graham, Lea Seydoux, whom I've never heard of, and many more, have come forward with allegations of sexual misconduct. F.U. Oliver Stone, film writer and producer Scott Weinberg, bluntly tweeted, "Hey, F.U. Oliver Stone, another toxic dinosaur like Schrader." And in general, these tweets are in that wonderfully elevated, eloquent mode. Oliver Stone, whether or not he actually grabbed that woman's breast, and I don't know if he did, is getting the same sort of, again, check out the play The Crucible. This is kind of what that play was about, just a firestorm of allegation, which then turns into a prairie fire, a political prairie fire that grows out of control. And again, I think one of the aspects of this that needs to be considered is the fact that human sexuality is a very complex, deeply conflicted situation. I would compare the over-the-top, I personally consider oversexed Hollywood culture to be considered in the context of alcohol. Some people can deal with it. Some people can have one or two or three drinks and not go off the deep end, but there are a lot of people who can't have one or two or three drinks because it turns into 100. They kill themselves or damage themselves and or many other people as well. Harvey Weinstein, as well as many others, appears to have been one of those people who couldn't handle it. I fault Harvey Weinstein for not having gotten the help that he appears to have needed. He has money. He should have gotten help, although he has a lot of company. There are a lot of people who become alcoholics or drug addicts, and they don't get the help they need either, particularly if they're powerful. People will kowtow to them. They will kiss their derrieres. And again, in Hollywood, many of those starlets have shown up, the ones who accuse Weinstein. By the way, Angelina Jolie, one of his accusers, was the person who co-authored that Guardian op-ed piece with NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg, calling for NATO, a military entity, to take the lead in defending women's rights. That's what I mean by weaponized feminism. One of the things about it. Hollywood and sexuality are just a couple of really complex things. I remember some decades ago, the pop singer Madonna complained. She was, I believe the movie was a bit crazy. Maybe it was one of the Batman movies. Anyway, a feature film based on a comic strip. I mean, that's Hollywood. You know, Hollywood. She complained, Madonna complained, that she was being treated like a piece of meat. Well, Madonna is, of course, a pop singer in this case. She forayed into the motion picture business as someone who was an accomplished and gifted, or certainly talented, classical singer in his youth. I can assure you that Madonna's vocal talents are very limited. Madonna has achieved her success as a pop singer not because she has perfect pitch and a two-octave range, but because she shakes her well-toned booty to great effect. Plus, her writers are good at writing what are known as earworms, catchy tunes. And for Madonna to complain on the set of what I think it was Dick Tracy that she was treated like a piece of meat, well, that is not altogether mysterious to me. I mean, personally, I've always considered Madonna to be not only a leading literary critic, but one of the cutting-edge practitioners of high energy, one of the cutting-edge theoreticians in high-energy physics. I'm being sarcastic, of course. I don't fault Madonna for using her charms and shaking her well-toned booty for professional gain. She is wealthy, and that is one of the ways that you can do it. But again, I don't think she is altogether, and I don't sanction her being sexually harassed or talked down to. But I think maybe she needs to take a good look in the mirror and ask herself whether or not she may bear a degree of responsibility for the way people look at her, okay? Another aspect of weaponized feminism, and again, bearing in mind, well, another aspect of the Harvey Weinstein case, before I get to that, that has not really received much discussion, and that concerns what happens to some of the media outlets that have been the focal point of some of this activity. I would note that after Fox News was the focal point of litigation and apparently had to settle with some of its female journalistic personalities, the 21st Century Fox Corporation was sold to Disney. They are going to spin off, apparently, the news division. Disney is, of course, one of the great giants in the American media landscape. Disney Resorts had strong links with Prince Al-Waleed, who was a supporter of the Muslim Brotherhood, apparently also a financier of Al-Qaeda. Walt Disney himself, as discussed in For the Record 301, I believe it is, Mickey Mouschwitz, was an arch reactionary. He was the special agent in charge contact during the Hollywood blacklisting and McCarthy period. He was a well-known attendee at American Nazi Party meetings before the attack on Pearl Harbor, and also was reported to have bathed his 16-year-old stepdaughter by hand, up until she was 16 years old, at which point his wife had the stepdaughter sent off to private school in Switzerland. Apparently, she thought that was a little bit too goofy. Disney is a major media giant in this country, and although the current head of it is a Democrat, it generally tracks to the right. The Weinstein properties include Miramax, which was bought from the Disney Corporation. It remains to be seen who winds up gaining control of Weinstein and Company, Weinstein Company. But I would note one of the corporate suitors, this from Variety of January 15th of 2018 by Cynthia Littleton. Killer content blasts Weinstein Company's sales process and, quote, optical branding effort. Killer content has proposed buying the Weinstein Company library and development assets and establishing a fund through the New York Women's Foundation to ensure that proceeds from titles produced under Harvey Weinstein's leadership are reverted to organizations that support victims of harassment, assault, and discrimination. On Saturday, killer content and philanthropist Abigail Disney unveiled a plan to launch a female-led studio venture level forward with a focus on promoting social change. Abigail Disney is the granddaughter of Roy Disney. He was Walt Disney's brother and the co-founder of the Disney Media Empire. So again, we see a Disney person involved with the possible distribution of the assets of Weinstein Company. Again, this in the context of the already well-documented and apparently accelerating concentration of media ownership. After the media firestorm about sexual harassment, very possibly absolutely justified, watch who winds up gaining control of the media assets involved. Disney purchases Fox after the apparently justified charges and lawsuits about sexual harassment at Fox News. And now we see Abigail Disney, the granddaughter of Walt Disney's brother and partner Roy Disney, involved with killer content. So it remains to be seen who winds up gaining control of Weinstein Company. One of Weinstein's properties was, again, Miramax, which was spun off from Disney in the first place. I also would note, along the lines of divide and conquer, and this is something I'm just going to have to allude to because we don't have time to go into it. Maybe I'll take this up in another program, or maybe I will just leave this in the description for the show and allow listeners to read the description. But a manifestation of identity politics in the Trump era is the Women's March. The first was in January of 2017, featuring, by the way, someone we will touch on, that is Gloria Steinem. The most recent Women's March featured prominent people, such as a woman named Tamika, T-A-M-I-K-A, Mallory, M-A-L-L-O-R-Y, Carmen Perez, P-E-R-E-Z, and Linda Sarsour, S-A-R-S-O-U-R, the generator of the Women's March, that the aforementioned Linda Sarsour. They are coming to the defense of Louis Farrakhan, head of the Nation of Islam, that is listed by the Southern Poverty Law Center quite correctly as a hate organization. It is basically an American domestic black fascist organization. Louis Farrakhan, or as he was calling himself then, Louis X, is implicated in the assassination of Malcolm X, the man whose mantle he assimilated, or assumed, I should say. There was a miscellaneous archive show called Louis Farrakhan. There is a For the Record show called Louis Farrakhan and the Politics of Murder, drawing on information from the book The Judas Factor by Carl Evans, last name E-V-A-N-double-Z as in zebra, talking about the very suspicious behavior of Louis X, or now Louis Farrakhan as he calls himself, and the murder of Malcolm X. Malcolm X's killing, like that of Martin Luther King, JFK, RFK, and many others, was a national security killing. But at the lower level, Louis X engaged in some apparently very suspicious behavior. Louis Farrakhan came out with the following: Jews were responsible for all of this filth and degenerate behavior that Hollywood is putting out, turning men into women and women into men. White folks are going down, and Satan is going down. And Farrakhan, by God's grace, has pulled the cover off of that satanic Jew, and I'm here to say your time is up, your world is through. Hitler couldn't have said it any better. And a number of articles, one in the Jerusalem Post, has noted that Tamika Mallory, Carmen Perez, and Linda Sarsour had not only refused to condemn Louis Farrakhan, but they have come to his defense. Not only, again, splitting off white and black, bearing in mind the divide and conquer gambit, splitting off black from white, but Jew from Gentile, as well as, to an extent, men from women. If you can have weaponized feminism, again, not feminism, but weaponized feminism, you can fragment your opponents, split male from female, split white from black, split black from Jew, split Jew from Gentile, a good way of doing it. The Forward also noted how people like Tamika Mallory and others have come to the defense of Louis Farrakhan. And these are people who have been very prominent in the Women's March, and who, with their defense of black fascist Louis Farrakhan, anti-Semite Louis Farrakhan, and possible conspirator in the murder of Malcolm X Louis Farrakhan, they are discrediting the Women's March. And I can think of no better manifestation of weaponized feminism. CNN talked about that, also talked about Keith Ellison. And perhaps we should do this in another show. Another woman, by the way, curiously named Bob Bland. It's actually a woman. And she has her company has contracted with the Pentagon for production of some smart textiles. She also has come to the defense of Louis Farrakhan. I would note that one of the participants in the very first Women's March was the doyenne of American feminism, namely Gloria Steinem. Gloria Steinem has a long, well-documented association with the CIA. If you talk about that, however, you will come under fire from many feminists who will simply accuse you of defaming Gloria Steinem. Gloria Steinem herself boasted of her links with the CIA and interviews with the Washington Post and the New York Times back in 1967, and she said it was good journalistic training. She claims she severed her association with the CIA. In the Miscellaneous Archive show called Gloria in Excelsis, Miscellaneous Archive show M4, I discussed information suggesting very strongly that Gloria Steinem's association with the CIA did not end in 1967. The Miscellaneous Archive show N4 had very high record levels. The cassette tape that was recorded decades ago, back in 1986, and the cassette recorder that was recording the signal off-air, the record function was too high, so there is a lot of distortion. I am going to put a link to a transcript that will be in the news and supplemental section of the Spitfire website for that program. Perhaps we should do another show about weaponized feminism, although there is an awful lot to discuss. Maybe For the Record 1000 will be about just that. We will see. However, we are all out of time. This concludes For the Record program 999. In politics, nothing happens by accident. Weaponized feminism and the hashtag MeToo movement, part two, subtitled The Crucible. This is being recorded on March 6th of the year 2018. I'm Dave Emery. Have fun.